When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Ridiculous.
Welcome, friends, to Perfect Stranger Things, a weekly dance of joy for your eardrums. I'm your host, Anthony. Steve and I cover the Nina Project. Ella's back, and her powers are getting very interesting. Steve and I discuss possible plot lines for a season 5, and Steve and I cover the various permutations of SpaghettiOs. Just a word on Steve's audio. The first 8 minutes or so are not great, and then we fix the mic, and then it's fine after that. So if you're one of these folks that tunes in just to hear the dog noises in the background for Steve's audio, you're not going to get those in the first 8 minutes. So just go ahead and skip ahead, and I guarantee you'll hear a few dog noises after that. All right, an aphorism or two from the ancient one, Mr. Wilford Brimley.
You got a story in here. This is the damnest story you ever read. Tell you what we're gonna do. We're gonna sit right here and talk about it. Now we'll talk all day if you want it.
It's the right thing to do.
Steve, today we're covering Season 4, Episode 5, The Nina Project. And I've identified 8, count them, 8 storylines. So, 8-sided die. Again, Gucci free.
Gucci free. Crowd goes wild.
It'd be interesting to know if our fans like the, you know, that little thrill of knowing that it could just end at any moment.
I know my wife doesn't care for it.
She doesn't. Oh, she doesn't like the Gucci.
Because I think the concern is that, you know, we won't touch on something she wants to hear us talk about.
Yeah. Well,
it's a fallen world.
this is the way the world works when there's Gucci's. All right, I'm just gonna roll this thing. We just jump right in. Three is Hopper. Hopper's getting his ass beat again. Afterwards, he realizes that Jack and Hagar is a prisoner too. Jack, I'm sure this guy has a name. I think it's Antonov or something like that. But he'll always be Jack and Hagar to me. Jack and tries to scheme his way out of the prison while Hopper laments over his bad luck in life. He thinks that he's only brought a curse into the lives of the women that he loves. I'm kind of enjoying seeing Jack and Hagar back in prison. I don't know if you remember back to season 2 of Game of Thrones.
Oh, yeah.
We first meet Jack and Hagar in a cage.
That's right.
He's trying to scheme his way out. So I get to a little nostalgia there for good old Jack. And he's a little bit less magic. He's a little less magic in this
magic abounds, but not through him.
So. Uh-huh, right, exactly. So, in a show that is rotten with magic, poor Jack and Hagar is at a disadvantage.
He's left out, yeah.
How are you feeling about the emotional stakes for Hopper? Are these doing anything for you?
I think this episode does a little bit more. I mean, it is a bit of a expository pity party, and I forgive it. He's gone through an awful lot at this point. He's basically like just getting all the Harrington beatdowns in one season.
I do feel like because I was a little bit worried, like, so if you're just going to remove Hopper because you want to raise the stakes for the Scooby-Doo gang, then I feel like none of this Russia storyline really matters. But I do feel like this episode reminds me why I actually care about Hopper's emotional investment in Eleven. And also Joyce now. So I think that you almost need, even though it's a little bit expository, I feel like you almost need something like this to happen in this storyline in order to pay it off later.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think, yeah, because there has been a bit of a, and meanwhile in Russia, to the whole Hopper, you know, storyline. And I still am not, I mean, I don't know how it's all going to tie in. I don't know what the advantages are. Like, at this point, you spend so much time in Russia, it feels like, well, there's got to be something else that comes out of it besides just getting Hopper back, right? Like, the juice has to be worth the squeeze at this point. We have to get, like, even if it's just, oh, cool, on their way out, they found, like, this Russian weapon that can kill Vector or something.
They absolutely need something like that. They need this particular storyline to pay off in a way that helps the Hawkins plot along.
Right.
You need a sort of a, so the consequence of this is that now this can, this other thing can now happen in Hawkins.
Right. Because
no one cares. No one cares about these poor men in Kamchatka.
Right. Yeah. So I mean, if it's just this thing where, you know, Hopper, you know, unless it becomes something where on the way out he sees all these prisoners and he realizes, you know, I need to stay here. I need to stay in Russia.
I'm going to stay here. I'm going to train Drago so he can fight Rocky and end the Cold War.
That's right. Yeah, I mean, maybe there's something that'll come through with that.
Maybe Drago ended up having to fight the Demogorgon in his training.
That would be something.
Because they were using all the science available in the Soviet Union. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, that would be cool if we could see, like we find out it's a shared universe, and they get into where all the Drago training equipment is, and it's that's how you get, like, whatever they've been injecting Drago with, that if you get injected with that, then you can survive the Upside Down.
All right, I'm gonna roll this thing, unless you got more on Hopper.
But I think it is better. I you know, even though it was a little bit like, all right, bro, but at the same time, like, he thinks he's gonna die, and so I feel a little bit more emotionally connected to him again, and reminding why we, you know, it's just kind of, I mean, not that we forget, but it's when you don't see Hopper do anything but, you know, take a sledgehammer to the ankle and finger some peanut butter, it just feels like, well, what are we doing? I say that out loud.
To finger peanut butter? Not sure that you're allowed.
Well, that was
to
the original, like, you know, your chocolates butter. Your peanut butter is my chocolate slogan, and that's why they ended up settling on that, because it didn't test well.
No, I know that this podcast is listed as explicit, but Reese's
abandoned the whole strategy for that the campaign. That's when Butterfinger came in and was like, "Bro, we're going, we're leaning in."
I'm gonna roll this thing. All right, we got ourselves a 2. 11 wakes up in the back seat of the Riser Goon sedan. They're in the desert until they go down to the compound where there is a big old Project Nina waiting. Dr. Brenner in his magnificent hair is back. L tries to run to no avail. L wakes up again, this time in her old Hawkins lab attire. This time she's walking through an old memory. A very creepy blonde fellow freaks her out until she hears Brenner's voice over the PA. Brenner explains the story of Nina and tells her to focus on her training. She does and begins to progress through her Padawan playground. She tries to escape, and her powers return, albeit in a limited way. L decides to return to her training, this time willingly.
You're frightened of me. Perhaps in our time apart, you may have even grown to hate me. But all I've ever wanted to do is to help you. And right now, I think you very much need my help. Your gifts have been stolen. I believe I know why. and I believe I know how to get them back. Let us work together again, you and I, daughter and papa.
You got your wish, Steve. You got Modine and his hair back.
Yeah, that's good. That's good for everybody.
Do you care at all that we were pretty convinced that Modine was killed at the end of season one and now he's back?
Do I care? I don't.
Because I don't care. I kind of like, I like what Modine brings to the story enough that I'm willing to forgive the fact that he, I'm pretty sure he was eaten by a Demogorgon, but anyway.
Yeah, there is, so that brings up a question is like, I mean, the first thing I thought was, I'm like, is this really Dr. Brenner? Like, or is there something else right. to it? Right. And I don't know that we have any indication to suggest that it's not really him, but at the same time, he's just back, you know?
I think we're supposed to just believe this is Brenner and he escaped.
Yeah. Clearly,
we didn't actually see him, you know, devoured face first or right. whatever.
There's something about Dr. Brenner though. There's more to him than meets the eye. Right. I mean, I think we see that in this episode. Hold on a second.
Man, I've been using the wrong mic the whole time.
You were, and I thought, it sounds a little different, but I think I'll just go with it. I actually did think about, like, saying, hey, are you using a different mic? And then I thought, that'll make it sound different halfway through the podcast, but now we're here.
Yeah, so what do we do now?
I think that we leave all of this in, and people will just have to deal with
it. Okay. Yeah, I looked over, and I saw that the mic was unplugged, and I'm like, that's weird. How are we doing?
It's an upside down magic trick. Right?
Yeah, because I did have a moment where I'm like, well, but how is this working? Not real, you know. I mean, obviously the computer could pick up. It's got its own microphone, but.
So anyway, I think that
which means now that with the better mic, you'll be able to hear my dog snoring in the background much easier.
I was thinking. You know, this is clearly of a lesser quality. But I don't miss the dog noises.
Well, get ready. They're back. Like Dr. Brenner.
Just like Dr. Brenner's resurrection, we will now hear Django's dog noises again.
Betcha. I was going to say before I made this discovery, did you get the sense that her, so you said her powers are limited, or are they limited when it comes to Dr. Brenner? Does he have, like, is he... Is he got like a RoboCop failsafe?
Mm-hmm. Or I don't know if you ended up seeing Black Widow.
Mm-mm.
Oh, it's good. You should see it. Anyway, I probably spoiled a little bit of Black Widow for you. But I got the sense that she expended her powers and then she was like out of energy.
Mm. Interesting.
I didn't think it was sort of like she can never use these powers on Brenner, but
well, but he says to her,
I wouldn't be disappointed if that was the case.
He says the first of at least two Tarantino-esque lines that we see in this season when he says, "You didn't really think it would be that easy, did you?"
Right.
To me, that suggests there's something more to this that he. Than he's letting on.
And she says, I don't understand. And he says, I do.
Mm-hmm.
So my way of thinking, the way I took it was, he just has a better understanding of how her powers, the limits of her powers. Now, you could take it a step further, and it sounds like this is where you're going, that he's built in a RoboCop failsafe,
there's something psychically, I think, through all this that perhaps she's more weaponized than she realizes.
Mm-hmm.
Or
maybe Dr. Brenner is her alternate personality and he never existed outside of her mind, and that's why he couldn't be eaten by a Demogorgon.
Yeah. Ooh, see, now we're cooking. Yeah, so that's kind of what I got out of it. I did think of it. So, did you?
I don't. I just for the listeners at home, I don't really think that. But
did you?
That'd be kind of cool.
Did you? But did you make note of the Kill Bill line?
No, remind me, what does he say? You didn't think that would be that easy.
Yeah, so that's a, I mean, I know it's not like a, that's not like a super specific phrase, but it is, Oren Ishii says that to Beatrix Kiddo.
Oh, interesting.
And then we get another, we get a Pulp Fiction reference, and I think it's the next episode. Hearing, like this one, I immediately went to that, to the Kill Bill thing, mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, mm-hmm. that's maybe, maybe not. And then the next episode, there's one that is like, oh, yeah, that's right there. I'm like, that seems like two in a row. Right. This seems intentional.
Yeah, in a show that's sort of hyper aware of the cultural influences that made it possible, you take that stuff a little bit more seriously.
Right. And which also wouldn't necessarily go in with the 80s motif by any stretch.
No, but we've already established that they're willing to jump ahead a bit.
Right.
You know, so I'm really digging Modine. I really feel like I believe that he's evil. I totally believe he's evil. At the same time, I totally believe that he has this paternal pride. Like, no one is more happy to see Eleven do Eleven magic stuff than he is. And there's a scene where Riser's like, you know, we shouldn't have put her in there. And Modine's like, no, she's going to swim. You're going to see exactly what my monster can do. And he's just playing that perfectly, I feel like.
No, I think so. And I think it's the, like, we've got this villain, right? We've got Vecna as his villain, but
mm-hmm.
the obstacles along the way in the regular world, the real world or whatever it is, pose unique challenges to each group, right? You've got the forming mob, right? Right now it's just a basketball team trying to, mm-hmm. trying to get vigilante justice. You've got this military presence that's trying to get L, and by virtue, then they're mm-hmm. also like sort of, they're the obstacle for the boys on their little journey.
Mm-hmm.
And then now you've got this, you don't really know what Dr. Brenner's ultimate end goal is.
No,
here.
This is all very X-Men. In fact, the fact that the basketball dummies in this episode are all wearing black suits.
Yeah, yeah.
Because they just came from a funeral, but now you get to put them in black suits. And so you got this third faction of goons.
Yeah.
Like, okay, now you got the evil scientists. They got their agenda. You got the military. You got their agenda. You got the evil mutants. They got their agenda. And then you got the good, you know, the X-Men. I really like all of these warring factions. And no one feeling like more dominant than the rest.
Right.
I really think that they're playing with equal degrees of ignorance and equal degrees. I mean, I guess one group has machine guns.
Yeah.
That's an asset.
Yeah, that does. Right? Yeah, well, but that's what I think is also great about just the overlapping peril, right? Because meanwhile, uh-huh. Vecna is just operating at the speed of Vecna, doing whatever he yeah. wants and going through with this plan. And so there, everybody, without necessarily maybe even knowing it, are all trying to stop. They're all trying to get together to stop him, right? And they can't get to that point until they get past whatever obstacles are in their way, you know, whether...
Well, yeah, no. So far, no one's ever menaced Vecna. There's no reason for Vecna to think that anyone's going to stop him from doing his Vecna.
Yeah, the only thing is he seemed, and it's brought up in this episode, he seemed a bit taken aback that Max had entered his world. Like, that seems different yeah. than the Upside Down, right? There's the Upside Down, and then there's this red world. And mm-hmm. Dustin suggesting that I'm jumping, you know, we haven't rolled that dice yet, but like in terms of just what we're doing to get to, as far as something has disrupted him, but it's not necessarily a threat.
So yeah, so Modine in this is sort of like I was a little bit worried in our 8-minute preview or whatever at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
I was a little worried, like, are they going to turn Modine into a gray character? Because I feel like part of what made that first season work was that this guy is all evil all the time.
Right.
And yet I do feel like I'm enjoying Modine. I'm enjoying that what he's bringing to the table. And he really, at the end of this episode, he really does, they have that papa daughter moment, which I think is supposed to make your skin crawl or whatever. But you do get the sense that, like, well, if Eleven's going to get her powers back, she's going to have to make a deal with the devil here.
Right. And then what it, see, for me, I find it even more, like, when you talk about the skin crawling element, there is also the element of, like, well, we know she needs her powers back because of this Vecna threat.
Yeah.
But for her, are the powers the, you know, I think that the spotlight on this season, the spotlight on Elle, and we see it through Mike, and it is, well, without her powers, she's just a kid. And if she's just a kid, does anybody care? So there's kind of, it seems almost a little like that when she goes and Stockholm syndromes her way into, you know, Dr. Brenner's hand and walk down the hall. I mean, there's multi levels of uncomfortability, at least for me. It's not only, it's like, I don't trust this Brenner guy, for one. I mean, I don't know how gray he is, but I don't think he's, even Paul Reiser sort of acts as a sort of a moral compass alongside him. So you don't know for sure. You know, he's still a scientist. He's still, you know, guided by whatever.
Well, it is helpful to have someone in the room with Brenner with some semblance of a moral compass, because you get more insight into Brenner's motivations.
Right.
You know, if everyone is just always obeying Brenner, he never has to explain himself to anyone.
And also there's somebody that you know is in the room that, at least as far as we understand, sees Elle as a person, as a child, as opposed to just something that, an experiment or a weapon. So when she, but when she goes back with him, it's like there's that, oh, she's sort of going back to where she's comfortable to some degree, because at least here she feels like she knows this place. She was bullied. She's going through emotional issues with dealing with, you know, maybe the loss of her first love, and all of those things are things she was never equipped to navigate. Because of how she was raised by Brenner, she doesn't have that capability. So at least here, she's like, I know where I stand with this guy, good or bad, and he can give me my purpose.
Well, it is a traumatic memory. It's a traumatic memory that's familiar to her.
Right, and she feels like, why would she feel any safer in the other world? I mean, she's tormented in that other world. She wants to.
Well, I was just gonna say, at this point, I don't know if she has any clue about Vecna and, you know, defeating Vecna. I think she's just thinking, I got to get back to Lenora, and I've got to finish Angela off.
Right. Well, the thing is like, if
in order to do that, I need my powers back, and I need to go back and completely ruin the entire town.
I need to go full carry on this place, or at least I need to have a moment where I'm in the quad and I scream with my hand out and something happens. Like, even if it's just a magic trick, like just something.
It's a little Superman 2. Was it Superman 2 where he like gives up his powers?
Yeah.
So he can fall in love.
Yeah, exactly.
And he gets beat up in the diner.
Yeah, no, actually, you know what? There may be some Superman 2 DNA in this. And if there is, I'm in. I am all for it. If there's a Neil before Zod moment, I'm in.
Neil before Zod moment where Elle breaks every bone in Angela's hand. Here's the other thing about this part of the storyline. I really think that this is the heart of the theme of the dream state, right? There's this dream theme that's running through the whole season. And I think it's probably, you know, a direct homage to Nightmare on Elm Street. Well, but it also works in this particular part of the story, because it's almost very Nightmare on Elm Street for her to run through the hallway and go into the room and realize this is a memory, but it's functioning like a nightmare. And so I think that there's this parallel between what Elle is going through and what really sort of the haunted house motif that's going on in the rest of the episode.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's interesting. They're all trying to get somewhere, but they're all trying to escape something to get there.
Yeah. We need to talk about the nameless, creepy blonde attendant that we meet in this episode.
Right.
Can I tell you a secret? Sometimes Papa doesn't tell the truth.
So we know who this turns out to be because we've watched the first seven episodes, but What were you thinking when this guy is introduced when you watch this for the first time?
Oh, I mean, I'm like, this guy's... I started to think that he was responsible for the first 8-minute scene.
Oh, you started to think that. I was wondering if this was supposed to be young Brenner.
Oh, I see. Like, you it goes that far back. Well, I mean, it wouldn't, timeline-wise, it wouldn't work because we saw him.
It wouldn't, the timeline wouldn't work, but because she is in a dream state.
Oh, gotcha.
And, you know, they're playing with sort of her being younger and older at the same time. But by the end of this, it was clear that it was not. I just didn't know what to do with this guy early on. And we clearly, the way that they introduce him, it's clear that he's an important new character, right? He's not just your garden variety goon.
Right.
And so I wasn't sure what they were trying to do with that particular character during this episode.
Yeah, all I had was, this is the key to that opening sequence.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Anything else on the Nina Project part of this episode?
No. So we talked about the last episode how we had no L, and now we get L back and get like
lots of L and lots of
now the L story is like really kicking into gear in a new way, right? So I think this is how it begins. Did you feel like you were you glad to have L back? Did you make a notice of that?
I'm glad to have L back, but I think I'm glad to have L back because they're doing something really interesting with her powers that we haven't seen before. Mm-hmm. And so I think that maybe when I was talking about the 11 fatigue before, I was thinking, how many times can you show her doing the same party tricks and have it be interesting?
Right.
But now that they've complicated her party tricks and connected her force powers with this little deal with the devil that she has to make at the end, I do feel like that's kind of interesting because now it's not like, this is what was done with me and now I'm just going to use my powers for good.
Right.
She's choosing. No, I need to, I'm going to have to become a superhero again and I might have to walk an unsavory path to make it happen.
Yeah, and the thing that... That kind of gets me going back to, I think we discussed this a little bit, but just the idea that she, because her age matters and the concept of identity matters and the idea that, well, if I don't have my superpowers, then Mike doesn't have the same feelings for me. If I don't have my superpowers, I'm nobody at school. If I don't have, like, all those different things, because it's different when you see, like, you know, like a Spider-Man with great power comes great responsibility. This feels a little different. Like, I don't know how, like, how much of this is based on I've been blessed with this heroic ability and it's for the greater good. I don't get that, you know what I mean? And I don't know. I mean, not that it's the opposite. It's just that I don't feel like it's like that's been explored. So that motivation is kind of ambiguous. And I like how that works because it might make a little more sense why she would make a decision to go follow Brenner. There's nobody here. There's no mic in her ear. There's nobody saying, choose this, don't choose that, or I'm with you no matter what, and all that stuff. So it's just, this is what I'm going to do. This is what I'm comfortable with. And it doesn't necessarily have to all be good for her motivation.
Exactly.
She clobbered somebody with a skate. I mean, she full on took the person out with a skate because she couldn't throw her across the room with her mind. I mean, that's the thing to remember in all of this.
Well, yeah. And the other thing about this is that, you know, it's really kind of a super villain move to say, I need to become more powerful here. I'm going to become something more than human. And so for Eleven to make this move to become more than human, it does complicate her character to a certain extent.
Which is nice. And I think that's kind of what you're referring to, too, is like we're seeing her with her, you know, instead of just pulling the same parlor trick, she's doing something else with it. And the show is doing something else with her powers. And I do like the idea that, and it doesn't feel stale to me. Like you just talked about like superhero tropes and how familiar they can be. And this is that sort of, you know what I mean? It's because sure. She doesn't have an Uncle Ben or an Alfred the Butler necessarily. Like the closest thing she's got right now is Dr. Brenner and we don't trust him, you know? And so, so that's kind of, it's intriguing.
He's her Ra's al Ghul at this point.
Right. Yeah. Probably more so than that.
Okay. I'm going to roll it.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
We're getting geared up for the 6th annual Summer Badass Fest. And while we're working on a slate of apex badass films to enjoy, we've got an early action-packed announcement to make.
Just like last year, we're kicking off Badass Season with a live movie watch and podcast recording. We've rented out a theater for connoisseurs of action films and Bald Move fans that just want to have a great time.
Unlike last year, this year's movie is top secret. Hush, hush. No hints, except it's incredibly badass. It stars an absolute icon of the genre. We're willing to bet most of you haven't seen it, and it's going to be an incredible viewing experience with a packed house of Bald Movers.
Those of you who came to last year's screening of Total Recall know what a party it was. And those of you who didn't, now's your chance to experience it. Meet me and Jim. Order some custom movie-themed drinks at the theater's full bar. Then watch us record the full podcast for the movie. We reserved a venue over twice the size as last year, but seating is still limited.
It's happening Friday, June 21st at 7 p.m. in our hometown of Cincinnati. Get full details and buy tickets at baldmove.com/live.
Cincinnati's actually a pretty great city to visit, and we've got lots of details for side adventures on our event page as well. The Reds are playing the Boston Red Sox in their fantastic Riverside Stadium. The thrills of Kings Island just minutes away, and I'll be leading a kayak trip down the scenic Little Miami River on Saturday.
Again, get full details and get your tickets now on our Badass Fest 6 page at baldmove.com/live.
We have ourselves a six. This is Max, Nancy, Dustin, Robin, and Steve, who I'm calling the Scooby-Doo gang. Max is drawing her Vecna vision with crayons. Crayon? How do you
crayons?
Say that? Crayons?
We used to just say crayons, right? Like, we didn't...
Crayons.
Cocoons of crayons.
Nancy pieces together the fragments and sees that it's a haunted house with a rose window. Dustin suggests that Max has infiltrated Vecna's mind. They decide to go to the old Creel house. They search the house as some familiar electricity shenanigans happen all around them. Vecna is then revealed to be an upside-down haunted house demon. The flashlights explode as Vecna murders Patrick. How did you like the haunted house stuff?
I think I'm a bit of a sucker for the haunted house.
You like the haunted house stuff?
I do.
I'll tell you what I liked. I really liked the flashlight, you know, turn your flashlights off kind of stuff.
Yeah.
It really sort of was a callback to the compass stuff of season one.
Oh, yeah.
You know, not that they didn't also do compass stuff elsewhere, but I like that. It's serving the same purpose. Like, they figured out a way to make these tools that are accessible to any kid, right? Any kid has an access to a flashlight.
Yeah, unless you're Steve and then you just totally missed the memo.
I laughed really hard.
Yeah, that's great.
Dustin looks at him and says, "Do you need to be told everything? You're not a child." I did think that there was a little bit of meta backlash. Do you think that that was the Duffer Brothers talking to the audience simultaneously?
Oh, because everyone's so old.
Oh, well, no. I was thinking, like, everyone that wants to, like, find all of the little intricacies and, like, say, well, wait, where did they get flashlights?
Oh, I see.
How did this happen? How come you didn't set that up? I did get a little sense that, like, they were telling the audience, Stop asking stupid questions. Of course, you don't need to be told everything.
That's funny.
Anyway, that's how I read it. But I thought that was a great little exchange, for sure. Glad to see Karen and Ted back on the show.
Yeah. Wow, that's a great dynamic, too. Just Ted still, just nothing moves him.
Ted is just so true to form. It's like his whole world is, all he cares about is just having a little bit of peace and quiet.
I just want to read my paper. I just want to watch TV. You know what? Karen, go have an affair. Just go.
Just one moment of peace, please. I do want to talk a little bit about Karen's hair, if you're up for it.
I'm
invested. You know I'm invested.
It's been a while since we've had a conversation about Karen. This is why I really want to do a season 3 rewatch, because I really want you to just spend some time with Karen by the pool.
All right, so what is that blonde perm do for you? Like, in terms of what does it remind you of?
It's what every like jazzercise or aerobicize.
It's a total jazzercise move, isn't it? Yeah. It's like, I don't know if it's Jane. Is it Jane Fonda?
Yeah, I don't know if she ever was permed out, but I'm sure she had to have been. But yeah, I mean, all those aerobics shows that would be on in the early morning that for some reason my dad would need to watch all the time.
That's funny. It was my mom working out to them, but
yeah, my dad wasn't working out that I could tell.
I mean, he was working out in the bathroom afterwards.
Just sitting on the couch. And I was like, as a kid, you're like, well, there's just certain things that happen when you become an adult. You drink black coffee with dinner, you read the paper, and I guess you get up early to watch women exercise.
And people wonder where you got your comedic spirit from.
Yeah.
This is talking about superheroes' origin stories.
I didn't ask to be bit by that spider, Anthony.
I'll be honest. I was a little disappointed.
It's just not. It's not a look that has stayed the test of time, right?
I mean, no, it hasn't. And I was looking at her. I was thinking about it, and I was like, you know, I shouldn't be too judgy, but oh my gosh, what are you doing? You look at like someone who went to my church as a kid.
If you can't handle Karen Wheeler at her perm, then you don't deserve her at her Farrah Fawcett feathered hair.
I know that I don't deserve Karen, for sure. For sure I don't. Yeah, I need to apologize. Probably need to apologize. I have little moments of darkness from here to time to time, Steve. Dustin's shirt and hats, these have to be an intentional homages to Styles and Teen Wolf, right?
It kind of feels like that, right? I mean, we've seen Teen Wolf posters,
Yeah, I think that's all I got on the Scooby-Doo gang. Maybe we should talk a little bit about Vecna, their Vecna reveal. I feel like this was the episode that did the most to try to connect the new bad guy with the Upside Down. Right.
Right. So because we saw an early glimpse of, you know, that's one thing they do a good job, is like when you're sitting there like, is this the Upside Down? Is this the Upside Down? And they ask things like, did you see little things floating around? Like they're asking Eddie that, right? Mm-hmm. And in the Upside Down, like in some of the Vecna dream sequences, it doesn't, right? You don't have that. But we do see that he exists in the, because we do see the little floaties. We do realize it exists in the Upside Down, but there's something else to it, right? There's like another layer, right. And so this grounds it in the Upside Down, which as little sense as it makes to them, it makes more sense than not, right? Because now you can say, well, if there's an Upside Down, if he's in the Upside Down, we know that you can get there through gates, and if you know how to get, and so now it's so now that helps that next part of the mission, is like there's a gate somewhere. And then that gives us access. Now, what do we do with it and all that? That's, you know, still up in the air. But to know that there's, because if it's only existing on like a psychic you know, like dream state, like a Freddy Krueger. It's like, well, that's, we haven't done that before. We don't know how to go with that. And we certainly can't do that without the help of somebody like L. But with the upside down and a gate, maybe we can, maybe there's a physical battle that can happen. You know what I mean? So
well, that's an important one. On top of that, I do feel like they established in the first season that a mother can be psychically connected to the child, even though the child's on the other side. Which, of course, we drew back to Poltergeist, right?
Right.
Right. The mother knows that there's a plane that separates her and the child. And even though the mother can't get to the child, they can be emotionally connected in a way. And they can even communicate with each other. And so you got that between Will and Joyce season one. In this season, what they're doing is they're saying, well, what's the dark side of that? Is there a way for a creature on the other side to be emotionally connected to one of our heroes? And in this way, they're, instead of using sort of that mother-child psychic bond, they're using trauma as that connection. The hero is experiencing trauma. You've got Max's trauma or Patrick's trauma or something like that. And then you've got this predator on the other side that's trying to, I don't know, manipulate it, right? So I do feel like this does, even though Vecna's not a creature we've ever met before, you do get the sense here that there might be a monster on the other side that could exploit some of the rules that they've established in season one.
Yeah, so that's the Scooby-Doo gang. It really is remarkable how you can get so caught up in these other things, and then meanwhile this little gang is going to deliver the information of Vecna. Vecna, it's a direct Vecna threat at this point. Mm-hmm. That's the primary.
Well, and they this doesn't work. None of this plot line works unless these are sort of upside down veterans, right?
Right.
They know how the upside down works. They know to turn the flashlights off. They know to try to piece together the drawings. They've done this before. They are, you know, they have the knowledge to follow the clues, and no one else in this story really does, or no one else in Hawkins really does, right? So,
and in some ways, the fact that there's all these other distractions that the police are going to have to be dealing with all these other deaths, the murders, it almost works to their advantage because they can kind of...
Oh, the whole town's distracted,
yeah,
right?
So they can do their funerals own thing.
Right.
And, but also it puts them at somewhat of a disadvantage because they don't really know what's brewing.
Yeah. And again, full on Scooby-Doo, right?
Yeah. You know, the haunted house trope, it works for a reason. The splitting up, you know, it gives you such a great opportunity to have your, you know, to work character relationships while also adding another sense of, like, taking a place that's already freaky, mm-hmm. and then you make it even freakier because it feels like they're all 1,000 miles away from each other, right? And it's...
Right. Right. And, you've added Argyle's mystery machine to this equation. You could just, you know, they're going to bring it to Hawkins for sure, and you've got your Shaggy character and Eddie who's going to get added to the group. And...
Yeah, and Argyle will be Scooby-Doo.
Argyle will turn... He will turn into a giant Great Dane.
Yeah.
who can kind of talk a little
the only
bit.
Explanation.
All right, I'm going to roll this thing. A one. Argyle drives the mystery machine through the desert. Jonathan, Will, and Mike can't keep a goon alive in the back. The goon gives the boy a pen. The boy's a pen and dies. They bury the goon as Argyle freaks out. The boys find a phone number inside the ballpoint pen. Then they try to use the number and realize they need a computer hacker. It's nice to have smart Jonathan back again.
Yeah. Yeah. Like
he was kind of a big dummy until this episode.
Well, and he'll rise to the occasion. You know, that's what we're learning.
Yeah, sure.
And that's, there I think, goes back to some of my... theory in the beginning was that, like, maybe this is just him just trying to not be responsible for things all the time. And it's like,
sure, yeah, exactly. I totally get it. And how are you? I just want to take your temperature on Argyle. How are you feeling about Argyle here?
I think the Argyle, the amount of Argyle so far has been good.
Because I was going to say that Eddie is certainly growing on me. Because I feel like he's a little bit over... In that first episode, I felt like Eddie with his little speeches and, you know, his little monologues were a little bit over the top.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like he settled into a real person for me.
Right.
In this episode, I feel like Argyle was a little bit over the top.
Listen, the bad government dudes are after your super girlfriend, right? Right! Okay, so maybe the cops can help us find out where she is, because they're gonna kill her, man. And if they kill her, they're gonna kill us. Actually, they might kill us before they kill her. I don't know, man.
Argyle!
Actually, I don't know what order they want
to
go.
They're gonna kill us. Listen to me.
Hey, meeny, miny, mo, shoot him, I don't need to go.
Listen!
Yeah, and I think he's the most cartoonish.
Exactly.
Yeah, and some of it is, some of the stuff's a little, it gets a little bit like, there's a little too much cartoonish. But
well, I do like the idea that okay, they're burying a dead body. Like someone should be freaking out, right?
Right.
Like that, because you want, you know, that's what you would do. Like for someone who is not a character in Pulp Fiction, if you have to bury a dead body, you should freak out. That's what a normal person would do. Of course, Argyle's not a normal person. So his freak out is going to be over the top, I suppose.
Right.
I don't know.
Yeah, and I think what's kind of fun, and Argyle serves this, Eddie's going through a lot right now, but I like the people that are getting introduced to that which the Hawkins gang just considers another day at the office to some degree.
Right, sure.
Yeah. Like, so everybody's so burying a body for these kids are like, man, this is we've seen worse. We've seen way worse. And so for Argyle, this is like, dude, there was death in my van and we're on the run and all stuff. And they're like, yeah, no, we'll get to all that later.
It's also helpful to the story to have someone who's so stupid that they act as a chaos agent.
Right.
His idea is like, okay, let's take this pizza box and create a headstone that, you know, names us all.
Right. Well, and the other part.
So you get the idea that like, all right, well, if you're going to keep this guy, like he'll drive you, but he might ruin everything. Right. 10 right. times. Right?
Well, and then on top of that, I think there's something advantageous about having a guy that's that kind of that big of a doofus is that you may not have to spend a lot of time explaining what's going on because they may take a lot at just face value.
Yeah. Or he'll need everything explained and he's sort of this exposition device.
Right. Yeah. So it works on a lot of levels, narrative level as well as, you know, it kind of moves things along. He's like he's the perfect guy to be your getaway because, I mean, he just wants to get away.
I thought it was interesting that there was that scene where Will was telling Mike that it's scary to tell people how you really feel. And so I thought that scene worked on a couple different levels. Number one, of course, you know, we've been talking about how Will's probably in the closet, right?
Right.
So it kind of works on that level where he's telling Mike, look, you know, you're a normal guy. This is what normal people experience. It's tough sometimes for normal guys like you and me to just tell people how they feel. And, of course, you know that Will knows this better than anyone, right?
So right.
It works on that level, but then it also works, I think, on the level where it establishes some interesting stakes for these characters emotionally. This is a movie that traffics in, or this is a show that traffics in fear, right? You're afraid of Dr. Brenner. You're afraid of the Upside Down and all that brings. You're afraid of, you know, evil communists and all of that business. But for these kids, it's just as scary to have an authentic relationship with someone that you care deeply about.
Right.
It really does show you that this show is not just about the haunted house stuff. It's about all of the stuff about growing up and learning to deal with these high school emotions in a new way. Like, all of that is just as scary as any of the monsters we meet.
We can destroy every gate and seal up the upside down forever, but puberty is still going to be hitting us in the crotch.
And that's another way to say it.
If you're looking for less sophistication,
in this case, I'm not sure if I'm Argyle or not. All right. Anyway, I really like that, and I like. I mean, it's pretty clear to me now. I don't feel like there's another way to read Will at this point. Do you?
No, I don't think so. I think it's pretty clear.
It's pretty clear. I mean, they haven't come out and say, I don't know what they're going to do with it. I mean, but I'm on the edge of my seat about that as much as I am with anything else.
Right. And there's a part of me that wonders.
Because it's not like Mike is the most enlightened guy in the world.
No, exactly. And it does make me wonder a little bit, like some of the tension I'm feeling is, will we resolve that this season?
Is this something that they're going to bring to the next,
Because there's a lot going on between now and, I mean, we have two episodes, I know they're going to be fairly long, but we still got to get Hopper out of Russia. We've got to figure out the L out of the Nina Project. What does that mean? You've got, the lynch mob that eventually forms. You've got all these things going on, and then you're going to, when is the right time to give them that poster?
Give him the painting. All right, well, I don't know, but if this is true to my high school experience, people usually waited till they were out of high school to come out of the closet,
right?
And sometimes it didn't even happen then. I mean, the 80s is still not a safe place to come out of the closet in most places in America.
Well, and we see that with Robin specifically, right? Like Robin kind of represents that. And like even Steve's like such a good friend, like he can't reveal why they are platonic with a capital P.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Here's what would be interesting to me. If in season 5 we follow them up in college.
Because there is a presumed time jump, right?
I think that they have to do a time jump because these kids are going to be 30 years old.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, Jonathan's already 45, I think.
Yeah, just between episodes, I think he aged.
He aged 10 years just in an episode. It would be interesting to me to see them in college and having gone their own ways, right?
Yeah, that'd be interesting.
And Will, Will living in the city in a new life and sort of estranged from Mike because, it didn't go well. Giving him that painting didn't go well. I don't know. I wonder if they might... do an It theme.
I was just gonna say that when you were done. It was like, will it be a revisiting of Hawkins for some reason? They have to come back, right?
They gotta come back, and they're not. Some of them are married, some of them are not. Some of them are successful, some of them are not. But they have to kind of go back to their roots to defeat the Mind Flayer one more time. I don't know.
Well, this is the opportunity for us to have a little bit of some predictions. So for whatever reason, I am somewhat convinced that we're going to lose somebody at the end of this season. And that's going to have some effect on season 5. And I'm thinking it's going to be Steve Harrington. I'm thinking, and I don't know that it's so much that I wouldn't be surprised if we leave this season with the impression that Steve Harrington died. Season 5 suggests that maybe he didn't, and that's why we're going back to Hawkins.
Interesting.
So that's just me spitballing.
Well, I think that I don't know if I recorded this with you, but I do think that I suggested before that I think it's Jonathan.
Mm-hmm.
That might be on his way out. But so back to the Will thing. My guess is that you're establishing a theme that you want to pay off at the end of this season. So I think that he will reveal to somebody that he is gay at some point this season. That's my I don't know what that means for sort of the friend group dynamics maybe that's what you explore season five or whatever. But yeah, I'm on the edge of my seat about that more than, even more than this other stuff.
Yeah, and they've slow played it. I mean, they've sort of like they do almost with everything with Will. I mean, Will, even though Will was like the catalyst for season, you know, one's adventures and everything, mm-hmm. He's still kind of like, oh yeah, and Will, it's like, you know, like in The Hangover, like, yeah, they're all looking for that guy, but finding it was like, all right, fine, that's fine.
I'm gonna roll this thing. You already did three. Already did one. This is the Joyce, Murray, and Yuri plot. Joyce and Murray are tied up and on their way to Mother Russia. But Yuri has time to make jokes to his captive audience. Joyce notices that Yuri can't hear them over the airplane noises. They cut themselves free and Murray fights Yuri and knocks him out. Then the plane crashes in the middle of nowhere, but the passengers survive. I really love an airplane fight scene. If you can give me, like, make it a cargo plane, knock out the pilot at some point, so no one's in the cockpit, it always works. I'm never not thrilled by that whole scenario.
Almost, I guess it's not quite Temple of Doom, right? Because they left while they were asleep, and then they had to crash.
Right, but I mean, you could how many movies have we seen this in? Right,
right.
So anyway, it always works for me. I was really happy with Murray this episode. This is a very strong Murray episode for me.
And again, now we get to see him put his physical skills to the test.
My fingers are like arrows. My arms like iron. My feet like spears. Resist, and I will end you. But turn this plane around, and I will spare your life.
I just laughed really hard when he starts talking about Jeremiah. Jeremiah is the 16-year-old from his karate class, and you know, he calls him a ferocious fighter, and I know that Murray is sort of an acquired taste, but I'm totally into Murray.
Yeah, no, I think Murray really helps the Russia plot work or make it compelling. Because I mean, mm-hmm. really, I mean, if you look, Joyce is just playing it pretty straight this season.
She's become the straight man for sure, and I do like Winona Ryder in this role better than the constant freak out mom, right? You know,
because it is nice that they're going, like, you know, at some point you figure she'd have to mellow out a little bit, right?
Or she's been through some stuff. I like that she's thinking like, he can't hear us. This is simple. Get free. Beat him with your karate skills. Get him to turn the plane around. This is not rocket science, Murray. Let's get this plot rolling. And Murray actually has to kind of hype himself up to make it all happen. Okay, let's roll it again. This is 8. This is actually, I did a little storyline for Patrick.
Oh, okay.
Patrick is in a church at the funeral service for Chrissy. He starts to experience a Vecna vision. Later, while with the basketball bullies, he suggests that they go to the cops. Jason convinces the group to track down the Hellfire Club, which is being called a cult now. The bullies go to Reefer Ricks, but Patrick continues to see Vecna flashes. He swims after Eddie, who's trying to escape by boat until he gets the full Vecna treatment above the surface of the water. So I feel like Patrick, he's there to remind the audience how high the stakes are.
Right. Which is really key, right? Because, I mean, it's such a key part because there's so much else going on, right? Like, all the things we just talked about. And it's easy for the Vecna threat to be not forgotten, but sort of mm-hmm. moved on from. And because now it becomes like, when it becomes part of the Scooby-Doo gang, it's more of a mystery to solve than it is a problem to withstand. And I mean, what they end up doing with Patrick's death, especially what we see in the next episode, I think is pretty brilliant. How it raises the stakes and complicates it even further.
It totally does, and it plays into the satanic panic stuff. But at the end of this episode, I was thinking, oh, now you got another ally.
Exactly.
Jason has seen that this is supernatural, that it couldn't have been Eddie. He witnessed a Vecna killing. How is this going to play? And I did not see the twist in the next episode.
Yeah, that was maybe one of the finer moments in the storytelling.
Because it's totally plausible that would be his interpretation. And here we are jumping to the next episode.
Yeah, but I mean, I think it's important because I think this does end with the, ended up going like thinking okay, well that, like, because
yeah.
I, like a little bit of a sigh of relief almost, like, mm-hmm. You see Patrick die, which is not great. But,
which is kind of what happens with Harrington at the end of season one, right? It's like Harrington is not in on the upside down plot at all. But then as soon as he witnesses the Demogorgon, now he's doing bat flips, right?
Right. Well, no, then that's exactly it, right? And that's why I think you think that. Because, well, this is how you quell that part. You know, so, okay, one less obstacle for because mm-hmm. So when it, but then when it, does the switch, and we can talk about it when we do the next episode. I think it's pretty fantastic because I do leave this episode with the sense of like, okay, well, at least Jason saw it.
Yeah, very interesting stuff. I do want to talk a little bit about Eddie here. Eddie is sort of playing straight victim at this point. Like the plot is happening all around Eddie. He's so far in this entire show, he's kind of a character without agency.
Mm-hmm.
He like witnesses weird stuff happen. The plot is happening to him. He's running away to Reefer Riggs. He's trying to escape by motorboat. So far he's seen two Vecna visions. So I feel like at some point you're going to, I mean, I guess he is kind of Shaggy. that's the way Shaggy functions in every Scooby-Doo episode.
Right, Shaggy. But, Shaggy seems like Shaggy never seems to have agency. He just seems to. he's experiencing it,
and he might like stumble on to being heroic every now and again. But I do feel like at some point Eddie has to do something that moves the plot. So far, the plot has been happening to him, and so I'm kind of waiting to see later on in the plot, like what's he gonna do that actually helps the Scooby-Doo gang to make him an interesting character. Because he's clearly an important character for this season.
Right. And unlike a lot of the other victims, where he's getting a lot more attention, right? So there's something about him that is necessary to move things along. And maybe it is almost purely to cultivate the satanic panic plot, because if he goes away, if he becomes mm-hmm. a Vecna victim, then, okay, well, maybe we can breathe a sigh of relief. The leader of this cult is gone.
Right. Because he lives with his uncle, right? We don't know what happened to his parents.
Right.
So he could have childhood trauma. They could do that.
He's getting it right now.
You know, he's got enough trauma just in the last couple days that lasts him a lifetime.
Hey, it's time for another season of Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? The premise is simple. A Gen Xer and a millennial watch old 80s action TV to see what still works and what doesn't. In previous seasons, we've done podcasts for Knight Rider, Airwolf, MacGyver, A-Team, and more. However, this year we're doing a very special season of Feeny. We're going back and reviewing the very special episodes of 80s and 90s sitcoms. Come cringe along with us as Hollywood tries to warn our families of the dangers of underage smoking, drug abuse, alcoholism, eating disorders, and much more. We start out with the episode of Boy Meets World where a high school kid gets sucked into a cult. Worlds collide as the Mr. Feeny finally makes an appearance on Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? Join me and my buddy Jay each week for episodes full of nostalgia and secondhand embarrassment. And don't worry, a very special isn't your speed. We've also got some all-time classic Knight Rider episodes to close the season with. Find Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? Each Wednesday on Bald Move Pulp, starting April 3rd. We're about 10 weeks out from House of the Dragon Season 2, and it's time to prepare for war.
Which in our case means, well, watching a lot of Hot D and reading a lot of Fire and Blood.
Each week between now and June 16th, Maester Anthony and his co-host Steve are hosting a watch of each episode of Hot D Season 1. And then me and Jim are going to host a discussion of the differences between the events on that episode and how they're recounted in George R.R. Martin's historical tome, Fire and Blood.
That's right, I've resorted to reading dragon books. God help us all. We'll see if my fresh eyes add any new insights or predictions into Season 2.
Arm yourselves with all the lore you can for the battles ahead. House of the Dragon returns June 16th, but we've got you covered until then.
Check out all of our upcoming Hot D coverage on the Hot D feed or on Bald Move Pulp, available wherever you listen to podcasts.
Commission podcasts are an awesome feature here at Bald Move that allows you, the individual listener, to decide what we talk about for a single podcast.
The community loves it because it often leads to fun fan favorite films and TV shows that we've overlooked getting the coverage they deserve.
And we love it because we're constantly exposed to great stuff that's not even on our radar.
The way it works is simple. You go to support.baldmove.com and you click on commissions. Then you pay the flat rate for the commission and tell us what two-ish hours of content you'd like us to make podcasts on.
Then we'll contact you for details, advanced feedback, and any dedications you'd like to make.
Then we watch the thing, discuss the thing, turn it into a podcast, and pump it right into your ears.
We get consistently great feedback on how much our commissioners love their podcast, and they make great gifts for the dedicated Bald Move fan in your life.
And who knows, that dedicated fan could even be you. Treat yourself. Check out support.baldmove.com for more info.
So we get introduced to Eddie in this episode with, you know, which led me to this, making a note, and I want to ask you the question. Were you a SpaghettiOs with meatballs, SpaghettiOs with Franks, or none of the above guy?
SpaghettiOs is one of these things that I always saw on a commercial that we never actually had in our house that I always thought would just looked amazing. Beluga caviar to my 8-year-old mind, right? And then eventually when I ended up getting SpaghettiOs at a friend's house, just thinking that they were the most disgusting thing I've ever tasted.
Just hot cat food.
And so, yes, hot cat food. And so I can say with confidence, Steve, I've only ever had SpaghettiOs once in my life, and there were no meatballs or any additional. It was just plain cat food, basically.
So yeah, so I was a SpaghettiO household, but I was a SpaghettiO with meatballs household. I remember getting SpaghettiOs without anything.
Did you also have stovetop stuffing?
Yeah, but I wouldn't eat it. Because it seemed like there was a vegetable in it.
Go ahead. So you were a SpaghettiOs household.
Yeah, so I would always get the meatballs, and I would go to a friend's house, and they'd be like, hey, you want SpaghettiOs? And I'm like, hell yeah, I do. And then it would be like the way you had it, just like poor, like a poor person. And and I'm like, what happened? Like, they're like, oh, well, this is just SpaghettiOs. The other one is SpaghettiOs with meatballs, and I don't like the meatballs. And I'm like, bro, I'm all about them. The meatballs are like the savory version of Crunch Berries. Like, I'm tolerating the rest of the Cap'n Crunch just so I can get those gross Crunch Berries. Like, if you had SpaghettiOs that was oops, all meatballs, I mean, I'm in.
That's funny, because your household was poor. but in your impoverished mind, basically, having the meatballs was sort of like having a hot tub out back for you guys.
Exactly. Even if the hot tub was like you know, leaking. You know, look, having meatballs in your SpaghettiOs is like having an above ground pool.
Yeah, not a big fan of SpaghettiOs, although it was always sort of my white whale, to be honest.
I wonder if you could make like maybe a more gourmet version, like a homemade SpaghettiOs. Because I don't even know if you can. Can you just get round pasta?
So here's what you do, I think. What you would do is you would roll your pasta You get it real flat, and you get like a little cookie cutter thing in the shape of an O.
Mm-hmm.
And then what you would do is you would, you know, you would have to like pinch it out so that you had that nice shape. And it'd be a bit fatter than your traditional spaghetti O.
Right.
But I think you could do more of a gourmand version of SpaghettiOs if you had the.
Here's what I would do, and I would take what you just said, and I think it was inspired. You know, like you said, a thicker version of the O. You make a giant O.
just one big O.
One giant O, and then a big meatball that sits right inside that O.
Ooh, I like it.
That's the gourmet. Oh man. Mm. Are you kidding me? Good night. I'm rich.
And that's how this episode of Perfect Stranger Things ends, folks. Let it be known that this idea for the Gourmand O is on the record. We've already claimed it. So
right. And that's the beauty of it, too, because, I mean, when you go to the menu and there's like, I think this is a misprint. It just says spaghetti O. I'm like, oh, it's one O.
Oh, baby.
You go to my restaurant and you take a picture with it and they're like, show us your O face. And you're just like, eh.
I think we've covered what we need to cover.